Good afternoon, my AOWs. I am so excited that you are listening in to this episode today. I have for you the initial results of the survey that I conducted a week ago on the areas of women's midlife health that you are interested in. I had over 360 responses on this survey. It went out to my email list and was on my Instagram story. So if not already following me there, I'm at Heather Hirsch MD. That's where I am at all my platforms. And you can jump on my email list. You can download your free hormone health guide. And I can't wait to get through these results with you. This is so exciting and so important because the United States government has said we want to reprioritize midlife women's health and menopause. And I think this is because there has been such social activism in terms of the excitement about reevaluating midlife and menopause. So let's get into these results.
Welcome to Health by Heather Hirsch, a podcast dedicated to uncovering many of the women's health issues many of us are wondering about, but few of us are talking about. My mission is to expose the current gaps in knowledge and care on all things women's health. Enjoy.
If you love the show and you're dying to work with me, there is a couple of different ways that you can do so. First, I have an incredible menopause course. It's called the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass, and don't be fooled, it also is for women in perimenopause. In this course, I teach you how to thrive. It's my signature method to help you figure out what HRT regimen is best and right for you and how to make adjustments and then how to get this from your own doctor. Now, I also see patients in my private telemedicine clinic. I have a license in several states and I'm always working on more. You can go to my website, heatherhirschmd.com, to find out if you want to take the course and join our incredible Facebook group with monthly lives or work with me one-on-one. Now, I hope I get the chance to work with you. And thank you so much for listening to the show. First and foremost, I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And as we're going into the winter holidays and it's getting darker, I hope that you're making the most of it by staying cozy and staying warm. And I know that I have listeners all over the globe and all over the country where I am in the United States, but man, I am not ready for winter. Like, I walked downstairs today and there's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. These trees are all covered with snow and there's kind of like deer galloping in my backyard. And I was like, I'm just not mentally accepting this. Like, it is still summer in my brain as my kids are like pulling on their boots and I'm like surfing through all the coats and stuff for their mittens and their hats. And oh my gosh, I'm just not ready to accept it. So if you have any tips for me on how to enjoy the winter holidays season, let me know. I am every single year, I vow that I'm going to learn to ski. So fun fact about me, I grew up in upstate New York. I left upstate New York when I went to college and medical school in Syracuse, so stayed in upstate New York, but I always said I was never going to come back to, I now live in Rochester, New York, and I always wanted to move somewhere warm or somewhere coastal. I mean, I got to like Ohio and then I moved to Massachusetts, so I was still on the East Coast, but I have never been on a pair of skis in my entire life. I know, it's like a crime. It's like a crime. So every year I say I'm going to pick up skiing and I have to force myself to do it. I don't really like being cold. I don't have Raynaud's, which is a condition where you can have vasoconstrictions in your fingers and your toes and they can get super, super cold. I just don't like being cold. So I don't know. I will update you and we're going to see how that goes. Now, in terms of why we're all here, I wanted to go over the responses to the survey that I sent out and it's really, really exciting. And this is really in light of the fact that, our government has said we are going to make women's health a priority finally. And again, I say this all the time when asked either by journalists or in media, that I really truly believe this grassroots activism really stemmed a lot from social media and during the pandemic and women really feeling like they have been mistreated and misunderstood for far too long. We're really flipping the script on hormone therapy and its safety, among other things. Not that hormone therapy is the one and only. Trust me, even though I talk about it a lot, it is not the one and only. There's many ways to treat menopause. There are women who can't take hormone therapy, don't want to take hormone therapy. But it is just really exciting. And I was so honored to be invited to a meeting on the Hill with some other amazing clinicians and activists and nonprofit organization leaders, and really talk to our congressmen about what is really important when it comes to midlife women's care. And particularly this breakfast discussion was aimed specifically at menopause. And we talked about funding research. We talked about access to knowledgeable doctors, i.e. training more doctors, and, you know, really getting medical schools and residencies to reprioritize midlife and menopause and training on hormone therapy so young doctors can see other doctors, counsel and prescribe hormone therapy. And, you know, potentially or hopefully, like, you know, really, really kind of going out and saying, let's do a public health campaign. Let's do a messaging campaign that menopause matters and that hormone therapy is safe, and sort of undo what happened 20 years ago or more at this point. Actually, probably more like 22 years ago. So I was so excited and honored and beyond blessed to have a voice there. And I take it very seriously. I take it as a very important part of my job is to listen to my followers on my platforms. And I love hearing your voices because I see patients, of course, as well, but I just, the more voices, the better. And I want to amplify your voice as much as I can. And you are always my passion for the content that I make, the podcast that I do, the TikToks that I do is usually because somebody said something to me in a patient visit, or, you know, I saw one of my colleagues who said something and that triggered something, or I'm reading comments on, you know, Instagram posts and DMs and et cetera. And so your feedback, even though I can't always get back to every single person individually, is so valuable to me. So I sent out this survey. I had 369 completed responses. I think the way this survey is, and probably there was more, but if they weren't completely done, probably because I didn't pay for like the super package, I don't get all the responses. I had over 800 survey visits. So some of you landed and either were like, oh my gosh, I love you, Dr. Hirsch, but I don't have the 5 minutes for this. I get it. And this is wild because in all of the surveys, research that I've been involved in, which is a lot in my residency in medical school, because it's sort of the quote unquote, I don't want to say easier, but, you know, it's not so as, and there's a difference between doing a survey and administering like a brand new novel drug to somebody, right? We can all agree on that. So, but oftentimes you got to bribe people. You really got to beg people to do surveys. You've got to give them Starbucks gift cards. And the fact that 369 of you did this out of the goodness of your heart and gave me 5 to 10 minutes of your time, like, I cannot thank you enough. I really, really can't. So, you know, essentially, I've got the results pulled up here on my iPad. So I'm going to read this over to you. And I'm going to kind of read these in real time. I've read through these results before. And I think I'm going to hopefully be able to publish this because this is really, really interesting data. So the majority of people who filled out this survey were 51 to 59 years old. And then the second runner-up group was 40 to 50. That makes sense. The majority of my following is 45 to 55. And then not surprisingly, the next biggest group was 50 to 60. And then the next biggest group was 41 to 45. That makes perfect sense because I also say 40 to 60 is also sort of the age range. And then a very small percent were less than 35 years old, which could be, and I didn't ask why, but maybe you're just interested in your following, or you've got premature ovarian insufficiency or surgical menopause. And another small sliver were 60 to 65. And again, that makes sense to me as well. So that's sort of the age range. About 50%, 49.86% of you were menopausal greater than 12 months of no period. And then not surprisingly, 32.5% were perimenopausal. Now, I actually did leave a small group for not sure, 11.38%. And that's because you've had either an ablation and you don't get periods, a hysterectomy, or you're on continuous birth control pills or some other continuous birth control. So I also think that is completely representative of a general population. 7% were premenopausal, still having regular periods. And then a small percent also, 1.3% had had some sort of gynecologic cancer. And so I don't know if you could, sorry, actually, because my assistant helped me fill this out. So I don't know if you could click two things at once, but about 1% are cancer survivors here in this list. Most people lived on the East Coast of the United States. Runner-up was Midwest. And then in third place was West Coast, then Canada. I'm not surprised at all by this. Then the UK, then Australia, and then other. And the reason I picked those, not because I favor those, but when I look at my analytics on Instagram and TikTok and et cetera, I usually see I'm most followed in the US and then the UK, Canada, sorry, then the UK, then Australia, and then other countries. So that all sort of maps out too. If you want to know about partner status, 71% reported to be married in a heterosexual relationship, 7% married in same-sex relationship, 9.8% in long-term partnership, 5% single, and 7.8% divorced. I don't know if you could click divorced and then, you know, remarried. I don't know if you could click two because you could have both, right? So that seems actually quite representative of the population. So I'm loving this already. Almost half of you, 48%, had one to two dependents. Then 38.1% had no dependents. It's interesting. I don't know if that means it, because I didn't really specify, you could have children but not have current dependents, right? So let's see. And then 12.2% had three to four, and then a small sliver had even more than that. Work status, 50%, 49.4% is full-time work. 28.73% next is work at home, homemaker, and then 21.82% is part-time work. That all looks, this looks very, very, you know, what I'm seeing is this looks very as a nice standard representation. In terms of highest level of education, 42% most bachelor's degree, 24.18% master's degree, 9% high school degree, 10% is doctorate degree or higher than, PhD or MD, I think is what that was. Okay, let's get to the juicy part. I think it's good to know anytime you're looking at a study, it's really nice to know the epidemiology. It's nice to know what is the population that's being studied. Am I studying all married heterosexual couples in the New York State? Am I studying, you know, just perimenopausal women? So that's why I wanted to go over those demographics with you. I think we've got a nice, very nice sample of people who follow me on social media and on my email list. Now, this is really funny. I asked you what symptoms you have, and I said, check off all that apply, but I forgot one. I forgot one of the most important symptoms. Don't kill me. I might have to redo this, but I forgot sleep. I know how I forgot sleep, but both me and my assistant were like, my assistant is amazing. And she has been with me for a really long time, and she is postmenopausal, surgical menopause. She was like, I can't believe we both forgot sleep. So anyways, so I'm so, so sorry. I've done these studies before and sleep is usually really high on the list, but the biggest symptom was brain fog. 72.75% of survey participants listed brain fog. And this is really important because when I was sitting around the table the other day on the Hill and we were talking about just so many things, like what could be, and if you want a whole podcast on that, I would love to just generally tell you more about what was we talked about and the main talking points. But we talked about menopause at work, and it was really interesting, this idea that things like break rooms for hot flashes are like great in theory, but not super practical. Like, who's going to be in a meeting and be like, sorry, I need to go to the hot flash room. Like, I need to go step into the cold room for 5 minutes. Like, maybe, but brain fog is, there's no like brain fog room. Like, I need to step into the brain fog room. And this is really, really important because so many women who come to see me will say, I don't feel like I'm as productive. I don't feel like I'm sharp. I'm not on my A game. And a lot of times this can improve with hormone therapy, you know, and there's other ways to improve brain fog. But I do think this is really important when it comes to things like what should we realistically be looking at? What should, you know, funding realistically be looking at when the most, the majority of women say brain fog is a problem. How do you study that? You know, what are the studies on that? What should be the primary outcomes of certain studies on, say, hormone therapy or non-hormonal options? I think this is so, so fascinating, because if I think about hot flashes, 48.77% said hot flashes, which is actually a huge decline. It's not a huge decline. Sorry. I'm looking at my graph as I'm talking, but it's not even the second or the third or the fourth. It's the fifth most common listed symptom. And hot flashes, by no means are they not annoying, but women will say to me all the time, if I had to live with hot flashes, as much as that sucks, fine. But it's the brain fog, it's the hot flashes at night, it's the you know, other symptoms that are slowly killing me. So I think this is so fascinating and really, really important. The next most common symptom listed, coming in at 68.39%, was low libido. And then really pretty tied to that at 67.3% is joint aches and pains. And I know that I miss sleep, so, you know, but I think this is so fascinating, because everyone thinks about hot flashes and vaginal dryness and night sweats, you know, in movies or in the media when they think about menopause. But what you guys said to me was brain fog, low libido, and joint aches and pains. We need more studies on joint aches and pains. We need more studies on the impacts of low sex hormones on joint aches and pains, because you want to be active. You want to go back to working out now that either the kids are gone or you're in a better financial situation, etc. But now we're having joint aches and pains. And low libido is affecting marriages. It's affecting self-esteem. It's affecting, you know, just joy in life, you know? And so I'm so touched by these results of this finding, because again, it is really just showing that it's not just hot. Menopause is more than hot flashes. As we go down the list, at 56.68% is vaginal dryness. That goes hand in hand, of course, with low libido, because if there's dryness, there's not going to be good libido. 49.32 said night sweats, which also is matching 48.0, right after that, pretty much tied, is hot flashes at 48.77%. So at 30, coming in at 34.3% is other, which is probably, oh my goodness, there's 126 responses there, but there's so much good stuff: weight gain, exhaustion, fatigue, paresthesias, which is just sort of numbness, bone loss, don't feel like myself. There's sleep disturbances, depression, osteopenia, migraines. So many good responses there. So you guys really hit that one home, and I'll look through that if I'm going to do another one. Another survey. Up for your symptoms, have you check all that apply? This has to do with what kind of care you've sought out for these symptoms that I just listed. So the vast majority, 79.8%, so almost 80%, said sought out medical care from your primary care or your GYN. Which is great. And the reason I think this is so valuable, I say this a lot in my podcasts, and to whomever will listen, is that even if your doctor does dismiss you or gives you a dismissive response, or, you know, I just had a patient, I just finished my day seeing patients, but I got to get this podcast done for you guys, who said, I was so confident about my HRT, Dr. Hirsch, I feel so much better. And I knew she was going to say, well, why are you doing that? And she just said, please, I feel really confident about this choice. I would love you to see Dr. Hirsch's resources. And you can always call her if you have any questions. And when you go to your primary care doctor, even if the response you get is not great, or it's disheartening, you are slowly chipping away. You are slowly helping, right? Because as these doctors keep hearing this, again, they're going to start to realize, I need to up my education. I'm not well-versed in this, and patients keep asking and it's not stopping. And even most doctors are on social media for their own pleasure. And so eventually, and I am telling you, I think in the next 2 to 3 years, and definitely within 5 years, we are going to flip the script on hormone therapy and the messages that have been consistently given to us from everywhere. We're going to get more doctors trained. I've got a wonderful class that I now have almost 125, maybe even 150 doctors and clinicians, MDs, NPs, DOs, PAs in. It's just so exciting. It's just a wonderful time. It's a wonderful time, and I couldn't be more blessed. 70% said, I learn a lot from social media. This is really interesting, because we talked a lot about the pros and cons of social media. Probably if you're doing this survey and you're following me, I have a suspicion that you're probably following a lot more evidence-based doctors on social media. A lot of people find me from Dr. Mary Claire Haver, Dr. Kelly Casperson, Dr. Rachel Rubin, or follow a bunch of us with really big social media followings. And this is great, but there's a downside to this. There's, of course, lots of clinicians. I kind of don't know anyone like by name off the top of my head that's talking about non-evidence-based kind of stuff or palliative center, et cetera. Oh, Dr. Corinne Mann, you got to follow her. She was on my podcast. So many amazing clinicians. Just follow everyone I follow, I guess, on social media and tell me who the other ones are that you love. There's so many good doctors out there doing so many things. I don't have time to list them all. 66% said I've read menopause books or perimenopause books. And there's so many good ones. I cannot wait. I have pre-ordered Lisa Misconi's The Menopause Brain. I am so excited. And that circles back to the fact that so many of you are having brain fog. So the impact, I think, of our quote unquote sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, brain function is going to be fascinating. I cannot wait to read her book. That is going to be something that I'm just dying to get in the mail. And of course, I have a book, Unlock Your Menopause Type, which is a great place to start. I go through treatments for each type. I go through hormone therapy, non-hormone therapy, supplements, diet, lifestyle, exercises for each type of menopause. And there's so many good ones out there. 50% said sought care from a specialist, like a NAMS expert, a specialist or a NAMS doctor. So that's amazing. I'm not surprised. This could be specifically because this is maybe people on my email list. So maybe some of the patients who have seen me. 16% said taking an online course. That's cool. And 17% said other. And I think I put that in because I have a course and I know there's lots of things. They said listen to menopause podcasts. Thank you, Heather. Podcasts. Wow, lots of podcasts. Homeopath, online research, pelvic floor physical therapist, took my Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass, a naturopath, NAMS website, information, Canada's information, Dr. One of Haver's, Mary Claire Haver's students, that's great, migraine specialist, lots of podcasts, wonderful, and pelvic floor physical therapist, way to go. You guys, this is so awesome. Oh, endocrinologist. That's great. Okay, wonderful. ISHWISH. That ISHWISH stands for the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. They have a great website too. Wonderful. That's so cool. I'm so excited. You guys, thank you so much. Okay. We're getting to the juicy stuff. In your opinion, what area of midlife women's health is most underfunded? Now, this is broken down by menopausal status, but to just make this easy, I'm going to say that for menopause and perimenopause, the majority of you said, actually, hold on, this is hard to read because I don't know exactly what. I think it just, the majority of people said menopause, which makes sense. And then perimenopause, which makes sense. Women's midlife sexual health was also high on that list. And then not surprisingly, gynecologic cancers. This is broken down for women based on like what they said their menopause stage was. And of course, the majority of women with gynecologic cancers said gynecologic cancer. So that is not all that unsurprising. Now, in terms of what topics should be studied, how would you rate the following of importance? The majority said head-to-head trials. Now, what a head-to-head trial is basically comparing one regimen to another. So for example, people ask me all the time, Dr. Hirsch, what's better, the patch or the gel? Because you say they're both fine and, you know, which one's better? We don't have a head-to-head trial, let's say on estradiol gel versus estradiol patch. We don't have a head, that means a randomized group gets one and gets the other and we follow you for a long time. It's supposed to be blinded, but there's no way to blind gel versus patch. Like you would know what you're putting on your body, but head-to-head trials. People ask all the time, what's better, perasterone, which is vaginal DHEA, also known as Interosa, or let's say Imvixi, which is estradiol capsules. And there's no head-to-head trials comparing the two. Head-to-head trials would be very, very helpful. What's better, Duavay or the combi patch? No head-to-head trials. So that would be so interesting. Or you could even do, for example, Veozah versus, which is a non-hormonal medication versus HRT. Okay. After that, the most voted for was, hold on, I got to get my mouse to move. Hormone therapy for use in breast cancer survivors. That is so cool. Interestingly, this was voted pretty highly, the second highest. I don't think that's the most eloquent way to say that, which is really, really fascinating. Me and Dr. Min talk about this all the time, that there's a lot of breast cancer survivors that really want a knowledgeable physician, clinician to talk to them about hormone therapy after a breast cancer diagnosis. After that is trials of hormone therapy and benefits on joint health. And you know why I put this there? And this survey came from my own brain, is so many patients report joint aches and pains. And that was the second most commonly cited symptom that you guys had reported in the survey. Trials of hormone therapy and brain benefits was next. Not at all surprised about that. Alzheimer's getting a lot of talk and funding, and I'm not at all surprised. And then long-term trials on the use of hormone therapy to prevent chronic diseases. Of course, the Women's Health Study was intended to do that, but the messaging and the FDA approvals have really kind of thrown a wrench in that. The next question was, what would you like to see advocated in regard to physician education? I mean, the vast majority of you said retraining for clinicians already in practice. And then next up was specialists, and then training in residency and medical schools. That was voted on almost universally. And then the last thing that I asked was, how important do you think it is for insurance to cover FDA approved HRT? And 98% of you said like 100, like I told you to rank it on a scale of 1 to 5, and 94% said a 1, which was like, it's extremely important. There's a couple other things in here that I think are interesting, but they're broken down by type, and they're kind of going to take me a second to really dig in and analyze. But isn't this really fascinating? I hope you found this fascinating. I think what's the most fascinating is that so many of you took the time to do this survey, and the fact that you're really interested in sexual health, testosterone, actually, which is another question that I didn't actually go through deeply into the results, because it's really buried in terms of menopause type. But most people are also really interested in more research on testosterone and its impact on sexual health and other benefits, and lobbying the FDA for testosterone approval for women. And so I'm seeing a lot of menopause is not just hot flashes. It is brain fog and how that impacts us in the workplace, how that impacts us at home, how that impacts our friendships. It is joint aches and pains, which is really important because then you can't exercise well. You're waking up, you're stiff, you're tossing and turning at night. It is wanting head-to-head trials on hormone therapy. It is wanting to know what can breast cancer survivors expect and the safety of HRT. It's getting doctors retrained. It's getting insurance approval and coverage for prescriptions. And I could not thank you more for filling out this survey for me. I think this is going to make a great talk or presentation at the Menopause Annual Society meeting, which is every year in the fall. I can't wait to say I am blessed because so many people filled this survey out for me and gave up their valuable time to do so. So to sort of end this podcast at some time, because, you know, we're getting, I kind of like to keep it to half an hour. Otherwise, I know even I can't finish a podcast. From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. Times are changing and change is coming, and the advocacy, the work that you've been doing, it is around the corner. I mean, I don't sugarcoat things because I learned long ago that it doesn't help anybody if we do that. But you are making such a big difference, and I am so proud of this movement. It really has come from everyone's voices. My patients tell me all the time, like, I'm talking to my friends, I'm telling them this, I'm giving them your name, I'm doing all the things. I'm like, wow. You know, even a few years ago, it wasn't like that. And even within some friend groups, they don't talk about menopause, but more and more and more, I'm seeing people really wanting to say, wait, it doesn't have to be like this. We don't have to suffer in silence. This isn't taboo. And there is so much that can be done. And the messages, I think, that are coming from higher and higher and higher are also going to shift and are also going to change. So it is a wonderful time for midlife women's health. All right, guys, thank you so much. Leave me a DM, leave me a comment over on social social media if you found this helpful. And look out for, you know, any more surveys that I might do. Definitely follow me over on my IG stories. I'm always releasing things there. If you want to become a patient, I'd love to see you. You can get the links on my website, heatherhirschmd.com/bookings. It's easy to find if you just go to heatherhirschmd.com or on the link in my bio. Thank you guys so much for all that you do for each other and also for me. Really, it's a two-way street. All right. See you guys next week. Bye, everyone. Thank you guys, as always, for listening to this show. If you love the show, you're going to love my new book, Unlock Your Menopause Type. This book is really meant to help you identify and target and therefore best treat your most bothersome menopause symptoms. In the book, I go through all the different ways menopause can be treated with HRT, of course, non-hormonal therapies, and diet, exercise, and lifestyle. You can get the book anywhere books are sold. And if you are so inclined, please leave a book review wherever you bought your book. I will absolutely be thanking you. I hope you enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it. If I haven't already done so, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my show. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Also, if you love the show, your stars or a quick review could really help other women who are searching for information on menopause and midlife around the globe find this show. If you want to work with me, consider the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. The link for that is in the description to this show. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all your support, and I'll see you next week for a brand new episode.